So the gospel and social media, let's be really clear. I mean, I'm sure they've had some sessions on the gospel, right? At a conference like this. Let's just be really clear about what we mean when we say gospel and social media. What we're going to talk about is how does who Jesus is and what he has done affect the way we interact with technology in our world. And so let's start off with the gospel. The gospel, there's one gospel, but there's three essential parts to the gospel. The first part is God's kingdom. And that is that God created us for life with him under his rule. So you and I, we were created to live under the rule of God. We weren't created to like be on our own queendom, kingdom, and rule our own universe. And we know that intuitively, but don't we fight against that? I mean, there's something in us that wants to be like the princess or the king, right? I mean, some of you are like, well, I had those t-shirts when I was younger. But like, that's our culture. But God says, no, I created you to live under my rule. There's so much freedom when we're free to live under our own little soap operas and free to live in the big adventure of knowing God and making him known. The problem is we rebelled against this, and this is what Genesis 3 is all about. If you open your Bible, what you'll see is in Genesis 1-2, it's very clear God is the king of the universe, and we are his subjects. But in Genesis 3, all hell literally breaks loose. And instead of believing that truth, Satan comes in and plants lies where God had planted truth. And our first parents bought into that lie, and they thought they could live apart from the reign and rule of God. And so the whole story of the Bible is a story of God, the good king, pursuing us, his subjects, and calling us back into his kingdom. And that's possible through the second part of the gospel, which is the cross of Christ. Now, when we speak of the cross of Christ, we're speaking of all that Jesus is and all that Jesus has done to bring us back home to God, with God, under his rule, as his subjects, as his sons and daughters, as the royalty we are created to be. Jesus makes that possible through his life, through living the life we should have lived, through his death on the cross. He died the death that we deserve to die, and his resurrection. By his resurrection, we are now citizens of God's kingdom. We are actually citizens of heaven, citizens of the kingdom of God. And why this is really good news, why we can really declare it, that's what gospel means. Gospel just means good news, is because it's by grace. So you have, the grace of God is the fact that God's kingdom, life with God, through the work of God, Jesus on the cross, is ours. I mean, we can step into this new reality of relating to God and relating to one another totally because of God's grace. That is not because we've earned it or because we've deserved it or we're entitled to it, or because God looked at us and said, wow, I can really do some great work with you. I mean, you've got raw material. No, but because God just loves us. And that's what God's grace is. God's grace is not because we've earned it or deserved it, but because God gives it freely at Christ's expense. And that's really important for you to understand. It's so important for us to understand. Before we are subjects of God's kingdom, before we are Christians, we are separated and alienated from God. You know, before you can experience life with God, you have to acknowledge that you are lost. And not just that you are lost, I'm sure you've heard that before, but that you have lost. In the whole game of religion and life, you have failed. You are an absolute loser. And you need to acknowledge that. Like, you know the whole like double loser thing? It's like infinitely beyond being a double loser. You are a loser. I am a loser when it comes to interacting and doing life well with God. And it's important for us to understand that in relationship to technology. Because if any of us are coming to it and going, like, I'm going to get this whole Facebook or Twitter or Tumblr or, you know, Pinterest or whatever right, like, we have to acknowledge that we've gotten it wrong first. We've failed. Like, we're about ourselves. We want to be great. We want to be wonderful. We want people to acknowledge us. Amen? Come on. Yeah, I know. I could bring one of you up as an example, but I won't do that. We all want to be great and wonderful and loved and beautiful and strong. And it's like we need to acknowledge before we're ever strong, we're weak. Before we're ever beautiful in God's sight, we're ugly. Before we're ever right before God, we're wrong. And that's what grace is all about, because Jesus was beautiful, he was right, and he was perfect in our stead. That's what he was doing on the cross. Why was Christ on the cross? He was on the cross for the way we bully people online. He was on the cross for the way we're like, look at me on Twitter, right? That's what he was on the cross for, all our self-promotion and all our jealousy and all our rage and all our envy. That's what he was doing on the cross. And he was crucified in our stead. And so now, here's the good news. The good news is the pressure is off. We are now in relationship with God. And everything we're talking about today on technology, you can totally blow it and you're still loved by God. Right? I mean, like, And some of you need to know that because you've done some stupid crap online stuff, or high school group stuff online, okay? You know what I'm talking about? Like, you've said mean things. You've thought really evil things. You just need to know, like, you're still totally loved by God, no matter what you've done online. I mean, no matter what you've looked at, no matter what porn you've absorbed, no matter what porn you've been, some of you ladies, or no matter what porn you've said with your words through sexting or what have you, you are still totally loved by God. And that's important for us to recognize. Because if we think we're trying to do penance, like we're trying to pay back God now by getting it right, oh, that is just like a treadmill you don't want to get on. So that's the gospel. And then the gospel makes the church. We'll put some dresses on there for you ladies, right? One girl, two boys. So the gospel forms and fuels us as the church. So what that means is, because of what God's done, we are the church. And I'm speaking to you if you're a Christian. If you're not a Christian, you're just listening in on how we should conduct ourselves as the church. So the gospel makes us the church. And as the church, we're called to be in the world. And so now you're like, are we going to get to technology? Okay, that's what the world's all about. And so when you think of the world, when you think of the church, you can think of us being like worshipers and servants and disciples and so forth. But the world, think of the world as one world with five dimensions. And so the first dimension is like your home. The second dimension would be your work. For many of y'all, that would be your school as well. And then it would be like the rest and like what you do for fun. And then the other two would be like, where is their need? And then God's mission. So there'd be five parts of our world. Now, where does technology fit in our world out of those five things? That's not a rhetorical question. So like, where does technology fit in these domains? Fun, absolutely. How? It's where we talk to our friends. It's where we find out what's going on. It's where we listen to music. And, you know, how many of you, like, go and buy CDs anymore? Anyone buy CDs anymore? Some of you are like, what are CDs? Sometimes, yeah. Like, you're old school. Are you high school? No, you're a youth. You're a leader. So that's why. No one else, though. Do you guys know what a CD is? Yeah, I know you know what a CD is. So music, online, we got our, what else? That's one. Fun. Home? How? What else you can do at home? Exactly. I mean, probably 80% of your time at home, you are handling technology, right? I mean, you are on that thing all the time, like checking. Like, how many of you prefer Facebook over Twitter? Like, what's Facebook? How many Facebook people do we have here? How many Twitter people do we have here? How many, like, something else? Like, you just text like crazy. You're your own social media world. How many of you text a lot? Okay, so everyone kind of filled it in. And some of you are like, stick it to the man. I don't touch any of it. You're like old school notebooks and stuff. You're like bird carriers or something. So home, I think statistically, like, youth, you would be youth, like 18 to 25 or 13 to 25. Spends like 80% of time on technology at home. You know, many of us, like, we wake up in the middle of the night checking updates and stuff. I mean, first thing out of bed, people are checking stuff. I mean, it's everywhere now. What else? How about school? Social media, school? Yes? You can nod your heads, look intelligent. Yeah? How?
Homework?
Research, Wikipedia. Yeah, most of your papers, your research is online. How about need? Like, what I mean by need is, like, it's a messed up world. How does social media relate to need?
Brings awareness.
So, for example, with the tornado. So the tornado, how many of you, like, got a newspaper and read about the tornado? How did you hear about the tornado? TV, news. How many of you watched some form of YouTube video regarding the tornado? So like half the room, probably within 24 hours, right? How many of you had kind of requests come to you through Facebook on how you could participate in like helping out? Anyone? So a big group, which usually that would take like forever to hear about. It was fascinating with the tsunami earthquake in Japan. What was interesting is typically like the Red Cross said, we can't take any more requests. We can't like distribute any more requests. We can't find any more people. And so Google said, oh, we'll set up our own search and rescue. And so they set it up to where you could locate where people could possibly be or where you heard noises. And you could like actually identify people online for search and rescue. Yeah, and I mean, it happened like, and so innovation is just like at a whole new level for even things like need. And then mission, like evangelism. Yeah, we'll stop there. All right, so that's kind of how it relates. So some of you are like, how does the gospel relate? Now let's just talk about the implications of that. You can pull out your notes. Technology is a big part of our world. That's the main thing I want you to understand here. It's just everywhere. It's a huge part of our world. And for some of us, we don't even recognize how much of a part of our world it is because you guys have just grown up in it, so much of it. So for me, like I was talking to a friend this morning, I realized I didn't really start emailing or using the internet until my junior year in college. You'd have to go to the computer lab. I'm 37. And they're like, you're old. I know. It's just like old. But now, like my kids, like you guys are, it's just, you're not even aware of it. It's just there. It's just a part of your life. Do you think it's bad, good, or neutral? Bad, good, or neutral?
Neutral.
Okay, you read your notes. Good. Technology, most, not all, is neutral and can be used for good or evil. And so, for example, think about a syringe. All right? You know, syringe. So a syringe can be used for good. How?
Medicine.
It can be used for bad. How? Yeah, typically shooting heroin is not a good thing. You know, like if you're with your accountability partner and they're shooting heroin, typically you're going to like, that's confession of sin, not like shot heroin last night. How about a wheel? A wheel on a car can be used for driving to church or a drive-by shooting, right? Art can be used for all kinds of things. I mean, we can make beautiful drawings or we can make really like explicit vulgar things or people can make, you know, plans to destroy a village. How about the internet? How many of you have received good truth from the internet? Probably heard about this conference from the internet. And then it's also a major resource for pornography in our day, where a large percentage of the men in our church and young boys are struggling with pornography online. I mean, it's a massive evil. It's a huge part of our society now. So technology can be used for good, it can be used for evil, or it's just, it cannot be used at all. And we need to understand this lens. It's really important because oftentimes in the church, I don't know. I don't know the high school world at all. Is there like preachers that a lot of times are like, do not use Google. Do not use Facebook. Do not use Twitter. Do they say that at all? Yes or no? Tell me yes if they do. Raise your hand if you hear that. Sometimes. So it's kind of weird. I'm curious because like when I grew up, like things like TV and R-rated movies, they would be like, stay away. Stay away. Like even like 40 years ago, it was a huge deal in the church to go to movie theaters. So you're like, what are you talking about? It was a huge deal. But it's kind of weird. The church doesn't even know what to do with technology. You know, they'll have like safe eyes and stuff like that. But there's not really intelligent conversation on how are you supposed to interact with this world. It's typically like, you know, after kids screw up. Like I've looked at porn and there's a confession or something. But it's like, how do we intelligently interact with all this technology, with everything from texting to YouTube to Facebook, Twitter, what have you? Hopefully we can get there today. Our world has changed big time. How many of you could go to school or work without a computer? Would that work anymore? No, pretty much not at all. How many of your lives and relationships would radically change if you didn't have a cell phone or Facebook messaging? I mean, could you even survive? What would you do with all your time? How many of you go to public places and don't use your phone at all? How many of you, give me a half phone. You don't even have one? Okay, we'll work on that later. How many of you in your conversations, like talk to friends, but you're like, you know, really talking to your phone? How many of you have friends that they're never really with you? They're always like, OMG, right? Any of you got those friends? Like when they're around you, they're not really with you. They're always somewhere else. And they're talking maybe about being with you, but they're not even with you. I have a lot of pastor friends that are like that, but that's another story. We need to see how technology is affecting us. And let me just give my short version. I shared some of my college days. I'm a late adopter when it comes to technology. I mean, obviously, the majority of my church is like totally in that world. But I was kind of like, Facebook, what's that? I jumped into it just a few years ago. Twitter, I think, was just like a year or so ago. All my friends would always make fun of me. But immediately I saw the power of it. I mean, how overwhelming it is. How automatically it can just consume your life. How much it can cause me to disengage from actual relationships with people. How discouraging it can be. Just whether or not people respond to you or don't respond to you. I mean, it can really be depressing. And I also immediately saw, like, I could immediately send people, like, birthday updates and videos and all. You know, I could see the power of encouraging people and communicating with our church. But I also saw how absolutely discouraging it can be. But that's true with all technology. The two wrong ways to react to technology. One would be the bear hug, and the other would be the cold shoulder. The bear hug would be the unthinking use of technology. You know, everybody has an iPhone. I must have an iPhone. Not thinking at all about how technology is impacting and influencing us. The cold shoulder would be the other end. So one end would be the bear hug. That's a bear. The other would be the cold shoulder. So let's just say here's the two ends. So some of you are here. It's like the bear hug. You're like, oh, I love technology. Mom, I need a new phone. I must have a new phone. And it's like you're always online. Your parents are like, when are you going to go off your own? You're like, whatever. You're so lame. You don't know anything, right? And so you're just technology, technology, technology. And some of you, you're like, I'm probably barely anyone, is like, no technology at all. Like, I'm just going to go, you know, it's impossible not to use technology at all. I'm just going to go, like, build a fort in the woods. Well, you'd use a hammer or something. You would use tools. The cold shoulder is technology is worldly. I won't be corrupted by it. I'll stay away from it. Escape to the hills. It's an Amish mindset. The problem with this line of thinking is you're still using technology. The third way is the side hug. And y'all heard about the side hug? Anyone see that side hug like video those kids in the youth group did? Y'all see that? They did a whole like rap on the side hug. It's so funny. It was so lame, but it was really cool. It was really youth groupy. Who knows what a side hug is? You know what a side hug is? Side hug is like a Chris, come on up here. We can side hug. I won't do it with any of the women. So a side hug is like how you're supposed to hug as Christians, because you know you don't want to like be too close, and so you do it. Like when you meet a girl, you're like, hey sister. So let's give it up for Chris, our brother who's actually a sister, but not a sister. So a side hug is kind of how I'm encouraging. Don't just like full on embrace it, because there's all kinds of dangers, and we'll talk about those dangers. As a Christian, like I'm pretty aggressive on the freedom I think we have to interact with technology and media and movies and film and books as you grow older. Like, what I'm going to let my 12-year-old watch is different than what I'm going to let my 22-year-old watch. And the same goes for y'all. Like, slowly, you step into a world, and you need to be able to discern and think intelligently how to interact with movies, film, literature. You don't want your first, like, anti-Christian novel to come, like, your senior year in high school. You want to be able to thoughtfully engage with people that have opposing views. But as Christians, here's what's real important. We're never allowed to watch anything uncritically. We should always have a filter where we're thinking critically and constructively about what we're engaging in. Because what we interact with through the technology is really powerful. So the side hug is God calls us to love him and love others. And the question we need to ask is, how can I love God and love other people through this technology? So when you think about texting, when you think about, you know, using the internet, Facebook, Google, what, how can you love God? I mean, it's just really basic. How can I love God? I want to love you, God, and how can I love others with this technology? I mean, do you think you're really loving God and loving others if at home you're always absorbed with technology? You know, are you? Do you think you're really loving others if you're always like, I'm hanging out with my best friends, we're having the best time in the world, we're having the best time in the world, we're having the best time in the world. Do you think that's really loving others? Think of all the people that feel excluded. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a pretty well-known guy. I'm the pastor. You know, a lot of people like want to hang out with me at Sojourn. And I've just told some of my closest friends, I don't want you ever updating when we hang out. Because people automatically feel excluded. I have some very, very close friends, like super, super tight. We go on vacation quarterly. All our friends are tight. But I'll just tell you what, like most people in their like late 30s, they don't have a lot of tight friends. They just don't. People they hang out with, they're absorbed with their kids and their kids' schedule. And so people get really jealous when they hear of us going on vacation and hanging out and having a great time. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that through social media. You know how you feel? You feel totally left out when someone's like, you're at home for the weekend and they're like, I'm going snow skiing, having the best time with your best friend. And you're like, I'm really happy for you, but I want to kill you. Right? You know what I'm talking about? You can nod your heads and look like jealous, selfish people that you are. We all are that way, right? Don't like act like you're all holy, holy, holy. Like, you're human. You just can't help but be jealous at times. And so we need to think through those things. But what I'd gather is a lot of times we're not thinking through those things. We're not thinking of how our texts and how our updates and how we're using technology is really affecting and making other people feel. And how can we love them and love God just by the way we use technology? 9 potentially negative uses of Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. We could talk about a ton of things, but we're just going to talk about Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Is there something else that's big that I don't know about? That you guys are like, dude, you are so, Twitter is so 2002. Facebook is so yesterday. But is there another one, another channel that you guys use?
Like blogging?
Like blogging? Yeah.
Pinterest
is like real, real new. But maybe not new. That's new to me. That's kind of for ladies though, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, my wife's like, should I do this? I'm like, yeah, I'm interested in it. Do it. I'm not going to do it, but you can do it. So, 9 potentially negative uses. The first negative use would be the trend of using status updates to complain. And this is really popular. You know, I don't know what this looks like for you, but have you ever seen someone just like go off and complain? Like, I hate my teacher. I'm going to kill her. That can really get you in trouble, number one. So it's something as like mature Christians just to encourage your friends. Like, don't talk like that. Like, hey, man, you don't want to do that. This looks bad. You know, I get so discouraged. I've been talking, we got a couple guys I work with here. Like, pastors do that. Like, pastors are like, oh my gosh, I'm going to kill this guy from iPhone. I'm like, good grief, dude, you're a nut job. Like it's just, some people, there's just no filter. They don't realize, like, dude, like, think about what you're saying and who that's affecting. Measuring your worth and identity by number of Twitter followers and Facebook friends and Facebook interactions. The basic principle is Facebook measurements are opposite of gospel measurements. I mean, thank God that he doesn't measure us according to how many Facebook friends or Twitter followers we have, or how, like, many responses we get. Greater concern for overforming Twitter followers and Facebook virtual friends rather than real friends. Some people are more into, like, how people respond or update or how many likes you get than your actual friends and your encouragement. Do you realize how powerful it is just when you interact with a friend? Do you know what I mean? Like, just when you're, like, there with a friend, like, how are you doing? And that's something I'd really encourage you. Like, you guys, you have the ability to powerfully influence someone just in your interaction, just in the way you go, like, how are you doing? And the way you listen to them. I mean, you have a profound opportunity to actually shape their life. Do you realize the people around us shape who we are? So who's the biggest person around us? God, that's right. It's the Sunday school answer, but it's true. Like, he's the biggest person around us. And God intends for us to be formed by drawing near to him through faith in Christ. And then he forms us. How? Just by being who he is. And us being able to draw near, it shapes who we are. But do you realize it's the same with your friends? Your friends and your interactions with your friends form who you are. And Christ in you, Jesus in you, forms other people. And I know that might sound all mystical. It's just the way you're shaped and influenced. You're shaped by your parents. It shapes who you are. And you shape others. Now, if Christ dwells in you, do you think you can have a profound impact upon others? Yeah, you're trafficking with some serious followers. I mean, how many followers does Jesus have? Right? Like, the power of Jesus dwells within you. And so your interactions with your friends, even if you're like, you don't understand what I've done, you don't understand how jacked up I am. Yes, I do. I understand how messed up you are. But I understand how absolutely magnificent our God is. And by faith, our God dwells in you. And so by faith, y'all can have a huge impact upon your brothers and sisters, upon your parents. I mean, in our church, you know, like, maybe in your church, all the parents are dragging the kids. In our church, all the kids are dragging the parents. And it's incredible. Because I watch parents coming and they're like, there's tears in their eyes, and their high school or college age kids have dragged them to church, and they're like, I can't explain it, but my kids changed. And I'm hearing what you're saying and I want it. It's like every week, it's amazing what God can do through one changed life. And so we need to think about how much we impact others through our words and through our updates and through our interactions with people online. It's a diminishment of face-to-face time with people, enjoying and working on real relationships. Dual identities, number five. Being someone online, you'd never be in person. So online, you're like this kind of Bono, you know, evangelist, and you're all like wonderful, and you're like, Jesus rocks. I love youth group. And then you meet with friends interacting, and you're like, gossip, 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 right? And so the answer to that isn't, well, gossip online all the time. The answer to that is people see this dual identity. Or you're always happy online, but you're depressed in person. Or you're depressed online, but you're happy in person. Some of you have gotten into a habit of just being negative online. Like it's a carryover from like middle school. You're just like negative, 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 negative. And online, you're always negative. And it's like you need to break with that. And I don't know how you'll break with that. Maybe you just totally take a fast from the internet for a while. But it might be good for you to bring a friend in and say, hey, would you evaluate my timeline and just tell me if you see any patterns? It's like, yeah, I see this pattern where you always talk about your boyfriends like crazy. And dude, do you really want that? Like 3 years from now, you look back at your timeline and you want to like throw up in your mouth because you have all these boyfriends or girlfriends you've like talked about. Then you finally find the one. You know what I mean? And they're like, wow, look at that timeline. Like you want to get someone more mature than you, or maybe it's just a friend that you can like say, hey, maybe you invite your parent, maybe your youth group leader, maybe it's just a mentor, like an older college girl or senior or someone that can say, hey, would you mind looking and just telling me if you see anything about me that maybe I don't see? That's what friends do. You know, like we all have these massive blind spots. Well, friends point out the blind spots. Good friends do. Now, buddies and just like girlfriends, like they won't point that out, but like a good girlfriend, a good dude friend, they'll like say, hey, dude, your zipper's down. You know what I'm talking about? Like that's what a good friend will do. Six, hurting and excluding others intentionally or unintentionally. Cyberbullying is a big thing, you know, where people just, it's just so horrible what happens, about how bad people get bullied and, you know, sexting is really big, not being invited somewhere. But the cyberbullying and sexting are two of the biggest kind of phenomenons that are taking that the media is paying more attention to. Any of y'all have any stories at school, like where someone's really, not sexting, but like cyberbullying, where someone was really kind of beat up on online or like absolutely humiliated? No? You don't know anyone that's ever been absolutely humiliated online? Have you ever seen it? Maybe you don't know the person? I mean, it happens all the time. Yeah? Cool. Facebook and online life can make you feel distracted, changes how you think, attention span. That's what I've noticed with a lot of people. And what's funny is how many of you have noticed it with your parents? You all noticed it with your parents? Yeah, it's really weird. Like, I noticed like parents, they don't know how to deal with this. They're like, I'm online all the time. And all of a sudden, when your parents are like, OMG, you're like, what has happened? But it just makes people distracted. They're not as present. And it's pretty pervasive, you know, that I've seen. And almost to the point where, like, with my friends, I'm like, dude, let's just say when we're with each other, we'll put our phones down. Because when you're with me, like, I like organic, non-processed relationships. So can you just put down your phone? At our church, we said we're going to have the first church of chucking phones, to where we gave permission to our people just to grab someone's phone and chuck it if you're talking to them and they started pulling out their phone. Because how stinking rude is it? Like, if... pretend this is my iPhone. If I'm talking with you and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, you know what I mean? It's just so rude. And so in our church, we're like, dude, just chuck that phone. Just like break it. I don't care. Then deal with that later. You know, like it's really rude and it's unthoughtful. And you'll be radically countercultural if you just like put the phone away. You know, now some of you maybe don't have a problem with it, but maybe it's because you don't have freedom or maybe it's because you don't even have a phone. Something to think about once you get one though. It can tempt you away from your calling or your work. Your heart isn't engaged in something great and big, but constantly distracted by silly little status updates. I'm chewing gum and so forth. Thinking about yourself more than you already do. You weren't created to think about and focus on yourself. Facebook and Twitter can tempt you to become a more self-focused person than you are. What about opportunities? Any other negatives? What are other potential dangers of Facebook and Twitter? Yes, sir.
We've got one that I see a lot of my students that they'll try to be the Christian. You know, so they'll play the part of the Christian online where they'll post something like, I just got into a fight with someone. They won't name the song.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then they'll put like a Bible verse in there. Like, you know, but Jesus tells us to turn the other cheek. So I'm
yeah.
be your person. Something
yeah.
like that. And so, you know. Then you get like the, especially the adults in the church, they'll respond.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great that you're being the bigger person. They'll have like 30 responses.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you turn the other cheek by building like a posse to
yeah.
go after that other person. Nobody knows who that other person is.
But yeah.
That other person is now feeling attacked.
Yeah. It's so, we're so manipulative. It's so weird. And people do it in all kinds of ways. Any other? So, it's called passive aggressive. It's like, just straight up say what you mean what you say. Play the man, you know. I see that a lot. I mean, it's weird. Like, they're all there. Like, all the people in Metro, I'm like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe they're saying that. That's so crazy.
I think it feels a lot of times gossip.
Yeah.
Kind of like spying and figuring out people that maybe you wouldn't go and ask them questions and, you know, maybe relate to them and in your own relationship. Somehow you're friends with them on Facebook and so you're finding out information and maybe even sharing that information about them. Yeah, stalking. Yeah.
But you said, like, it's just manipulative. It's very manipulative. I mean, we're manipulative anyway, you know, but then we get really manipulative. And that's where I see a lot of the, like the vacation. Like, I see this, so I'm in mid-30s, and so, like, you're, like, people have kids, they want to go on vacation, and they're just like, oh, I can't go on vacation. And so when they finally get to go on vacation, they're like, oh, going on vacation, and, like, posting updates the whole time. And I'm like, just enjoy your vacation. Like, the rest of us don't need to know about it in January. And I might not even be jealous. I'm just realizing, like, what it's doing. Because people are like, oh, so happy for you, you know. So it's just, we're very manipulative. Like, here, I'm going to be great now. What else?
I think it isolates you.
Isolates you?
At least from some people. You know, you kind of choose the people that you interact with. They're generally going to be people like you. And then you can pretty much isolate yourself from, you know, people you don't want to interact with.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely some people you want to isolate from. Right. Because I'm a pastor, I just accept everybody on Facebook because it's like, I don't know. I don't want to be like, do you go to Sojourn? You know, or were you at that workshop? You know, but then all of a sudden there's like, you know, strippers and stuff like coming up on my Facebook thing. I'm like, oh my gosh, Mandy's my wife or my assistant. I'm like, can you go take care of that? Like big time quick, you know, like, so it can be really dangerous. So you really don't want to just accept any, especially on Facebook and so forth, like anybody. There's some crazy stuff that's happened. I've heard of some even crazier stuff online from my friends. Anything else? What else? What hurts? Anything hurt online?
It tends to be isolating my students from their parents because their parents act one way online and then treat their kids differently.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That is interesting. Remember that? Did you see that YouTube video of the guy that shot the computer? You all watch that? Oh my gosh. The daughter basically, she did something to her dad. I can't remember. Oh, like she did like this page long rant on Facebook about her dad. And her dad's like this country guy. And he gets on there with his cowboy hat and his cigarette. And he's like, blah, 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 blah. He's like, you think you're going to take care of me? And he pulls out a gun and then shoots the computer like 4 times. And of course, it got like 20 million hits. The guy was a nut job. I mean, his daughter's not. But what he doesn't get is a lot of people in your generation, they don't care. Their life is already just completely transparent. And that was like what commentators said later. They were like, she was like, whatever. I don't care, Dad. Like, you can't hurt me. My life is already out there. You're the one that looks like the fool now. It's fascinating. But yeah, that whole, like, the way parents, it's been fascinating for me to watch older people, some of you are like, you're old, older than me, use technology and how they're coming to that world, and how just absolutely immature they can be, and how much more seriously they take, like, the interaction as well. That's interesting. What else?
Yeah, like you were saying about how old people take it more seriously, like, they really do. Like, kids, they'll get on there, and they'll just be like, oh, whatever, this person's saying this. And old people get on there like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And, like, there's this one older lady, she's probably, like, 65. She's related to me somehow. And she goes to my family reunion, so.
Uh-huh.
She, like, she always posts stuff, and she's like, I'm just going to get off Facebook for a week because I can't stand all this drama. And I'm like, you're 65 years old. And then, like, the next day she's like, I can't do this. I can't stay off this long.
Like, hey. I can't stay off this long.
I was like, I can't deal with you.
Yeah, it's just not, I mean, even, I know some of y'all like email, even email is not the best. I've heard recently, even in my own family, like people use an email to communicate. Like there's some things that just are better face-to-face.
You can't tell tone.
No.
So much communication is nonverbal. It's like 95% of communication is nonverbal.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's just, I mean, I've always known that with email, like just tell, like texting, like some of my acquaintances, like they'll text arguments. They'll text. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, we're friends. Like, I'm not going to text argue with you. And so, like, to me, maybe that's what you guys are just like, that's what you do. I'm like, how do you argue over a text message? It just doesn't work. Well, hey, look, it totally can be used for bad, evil, you know, don't use Twitter, Facebook for evil. We could talk all day, like any technology. I mean, there's a lot of bad things I could do with a hammer, but there's a lot of good things as well. And how can we leverage it for good? So six Facebook opportunities, or TIFF. We use the acronym TIFF because I'm a Baptist. I have to use acronyms. So Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Six ways to do good through TIFF. One, you can get back in touch with old friends or faraway friends in an easy way, showing them how you've been changed by Jesus. So, like, as you've experienced change, maybe you have a friend from elementary school or friend that lived in another neighborhood or went to another youth group, and you can interact with them. Yeah.
Track me down and say, hey, would you be my friend? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where you want to be discerning, because it can get weird. And that's where I think it's real important. Like, I have to do this because I'm a pastor. I have to have a ton of people have all my passwords. And I'm like, you can search anything you ever want. Search all my emails. Search all my Facebook. I have one password. Chris and like 50 people know it. They can steal all my money and do whatever they want. So I think it's pretty important. Like, you have a bro or sister that, like, they're like, you can have access to my email, my Facebook, and would you mind checking on me every couple months? Would you mind going through my friend? Like, just ask your friend. It's just like, how many of you have heard of, like, accountability? Raise your hands. Okay. Have accountability for your online relationships. Have accountability for what you say. I mean, if it's so much a part of our life, if 50, 60% of our time we're online, it'd probably be good to say, hey, you want to look at my text messages? Hey, you want to look at my Facebook? Hey, you want to look at what I've blogged or what have you? It's just a good way you can have people speak into it. Now, ideally, you want three types of people. So there's you, and you have like an older Paul, and you have a Barnabas, who's like a friend, and you have a Timothy. I want you to think like that. So I want you to think like someone older who's like got some strength. Okay? Now, some of you've got really good relationships with your parents. Do you know what I'm talking? I mean, not all of us have, like, bad relationships with our parents. And I was like, maybe invite, like, an uncle or a mom or dad or someone to, like, say, hey, it's cool. Like, I have nothing to hide. Now, then you're Barnabas. That would be, like, your friend. It's like a peer that you can learn with. And most of the time, the majority of our growth, some of you are like, I need the Paul. No, it's just going to be a friend. You know, there's not, like, everyone's looking for the Yoda. You know what I'm talking about? Like, the guru. Like, typically, most of our growth happens by our friends. But then I also want you to think, what if you took a little Timothy, like a middle schooler or like a freshman, and you really, like, encourage them to think about their presence online? See, you know how you want someone older to pour into you? dude, you can be that older person. Maybe you can't always find that, but you can become that in the next 3 or 4 years. Like, think of that. Like, wouldn't you love to have someone a few years older than you that just loved you and encouraged you and, like, was willing to call you out, but not like a mom or dad, but, like, just as a big brother or sister? That's what you can become. And so think about that. You can use TIFF as an extension of face-to-face relationships, and it can be used to enhance time with people. You can use it to think less about yourself and others. It can be a tool for just getting to know other people. You know, you can use it to build accountability with your friends. You know, you can direct message or just Facebook message and encourage one another. I found it really cool to, like, just send people encouraging videos. People are always like, "What?" It takes like 3 seconds to do an encouraging video, you know, just to give them a real time, like, "Hey, man, just praying for you, loving you, happy birthday," but, like, actually sending them. What we can do is just amazing online. You know, so for example, like, you want to do something extra special, like, why don't you, like, on someone's birthday, like, bless them with a video? Think if you just did that with your parents. Like, you're like, "I don't want to write some long, big letter." What if you just did a 20-second video just telling them how much they mean to you? Uncle, grandma, grandpa, the 65-year-old. You know, it'd probably blow her mind if you just sent her, like, a birthday greeting. Like, she wouldn't even know what to do with it. She wouldn't know, first off, that it exists. She'd be like, "What is this? Like, how is this part of Facebook?" But, like, there's a lot of things we can do with technology that are, it's a great tool, and it's cheap. You can use TIFF to announce great things that have happened and influence people for Jesus. What other opportunities? You can read the rest. What other opportunities are there? If we're not going to blow it up, we're going to use it for good. How can it be used for good?
Like church pages can, like, update different Bible studies and stuff.
Yeah, so you can totally communicate all kinds of things online. Sojourn does that. I mean, Sojourn probably, we communicate, and we have, like, 50 feeds, and we're communicating everything from, like, today it was everything from what's being preached tomorrow to disaster relief with tornado to we have a bunch of people getting trained in this real intense, like, addiction recovery stuff and how they can be praying for that. Like, it's just, it's kind of nonstop.
You can share prayer requests. You can mention prayer.
Yeah.
If you need prayer.
You can share prayer requests. Absolutely. You know, mourning, bigging out, like, mourning the death and allowing people to spread that information. Isn't it horrible when you hear about someone passing away, like, months after and you didn't know? That's one of the great uses of technology. What else?
About for just church events, inviting friends and family.
Church events.
You know, you guys do a great job putting out videos, so inviting people through the video. You know.
Through the video, updates. I mean, just one of the basic things you can do is, you know, people who, like, totally feel unloved and stuff? What if you were like, "Dude, I just want to encourage someone that wouldn't normally be encouraged once a week. Don't, like, go try to save the world. Like, I'm gonna encourage everybody." It's like, no, why don't you just encourage someone in your youth group once a week and just say, "Hey, I want you to know I'm praying for you. Here's a great book. Here's a great verse." I mean, there's getting skilled in using that technology for good, and you can build up tons of people. That normally, you know how many of your friends, like, probably never have gotten a direct message or a Facebook message that was actually encouraging or just not, like, some general mass appeal? And then you just take your time to, like, write 140 characters of encouragement for them. That could be massive. That could be massive. You're a youth pastor. When was the last time you actually wrote an encouraging, not for the whole world to see, not so everyone sees that you're great too, but just an encouraging word to your youth pastor or your pastor, your mom, your dad? I mean, do you know how absolutely discouraged your parents feel about raising you most of the time? Like, they are not like, "We are awesome parents." I know some of your parents are like that, and they need counseling and therapy. But most of your parents, like, feel really discouraged. Like, they're not doing what it takes. And, like, you guys don't think that. You guys don't think, really, when it comes down to it. So just think about how you can use your words and use all that energy. Here's the thing. All that energy is already being used. That's my assumption. My assumption is you're already pouring a ton of energy into this. And so if you're not, I'm not telling you to, by the way. Like, personally, I'm kind of like, if you're like, "I'm not on there," I'm like, don't rush. Why the hurry? But if you're already on there and you're already putting a ton of energy, like statistics say you are, then use that energy for good. Just start leveraging it for good. Because it's easier to do that than to say, I'm just not going to use it. Now, one of the ways you probably could is by fasting from it. And so, like, what I mean by fast, what's a fast?
To go without something.
Any of y'all ever fasted before? You're like, you're not supposed to say. Don't let your right hand know what your left hand's doing. You know, like, but you know what I mean. Who's fasted before? Raise your hand. All right, you are awesome. Okay, so you fasted before, and all fasting is you do without something. So fasting from technology would be doing without technology. How many of you all ever fasted intentionally from technology? A couple, a few. So one of the reasons you want to fast is because you're completely unaware of how much it impacts you already. So the reason you would fast is to kind of see, like, how much does this affect me? How much is this really impacting me? So, like, this summer I took a 3-month sabbatical. I've been pastoring Sojourn for 12 years. And so you get a break sometimes. And I got a 3-month break. And I knew that social media, like, it wouldn't be good for me to ever be on there. So I fasted for 3 months from all social media, all email included. It was great. It was great. Like, I saw, like, emotionally I was really replenished. But recently I found myself, you know when you find yourself, like, in all your interactions, like, as soon as there's a lull in a conversation, you're like, whoosh. Is anyone else like that? Like, you're like, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. Like, I'm going to bed at night, laying next to my wonderful wife, and I'm like, whoosh, 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 wake up. Whoosh. And so just last week, I was like, okay, I'm going to take a 72-hour fast. Okay, so 72 hours I fasted. And you just realize how much it's apart the first day. Like, I'm like, whoo. Like, I'm like an old man. I just check the weather nonstop. Like, literally, I'll check the weather like 12 times in one day. The stinking weather. Like, that's neurotic. You know what I'm saying? Or have you ever, like, wanted something? Anyone ever wanted something? Like, shoes or, like, a dress? Like, I don't want dresses, but you know what I'm saying? Like, and then you think, like, you don't have the money, but you think maybe if I go there enough, it'll just magically appear. And so you just go and you check out those shoes or that dress or, like, that bike or what have you. And I do that all the time. Like, I want a mountain bike, and I'll check it 1,000 times. Like, just looking at it, just like, or shoes or something. And you're like, you're so self-absorbed and materialistic. I am. But I'm being sanctified. I'm being changed. And so what it helps is I'll confess that things to my accountability partners, my pastors, my friends, and say, dude, or the whole church. Like, it helps to realize, like, what am I being compulsive about? And what do I need to break away from? What are some of the things you guys check compulsively?
eBay?
We have one honest man. What else?
My husband
Craigslist all the time. I know guys that'll look at Craigslist on things 50, 60 times in one day.
Xbox Live.
Xbox Live. Yeah. Sports.
YouTube.
I mean, and it's almost weird. Like, have you ever noticed, like, ESPN SportsCenter, like, they play the same thing over and over and over again? It's like, it's just the same. Like, it's not even new information. We just go look at it again. It's weird.
Social media makes that worse because there's always links to their...
Oh, yeah.
So you're all over the place.
That's why I love reading from my Kindle or my iPad, but I don't because it's like this massive temptation there. Because as soon as I go there, a whole world's opened up to me. And so immediately, like, if I'm at one book, I can go, oh, and look at a footnote and then buy that book immediately. I know it's just there. Yeah. How about this question, since we're just asking questions? What question were we on? Oh, what you compulsively buy. So if you're listening to someone speak, do you think updating statuses, like, so say you just listen to Josh Harris. Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing to be like listening to Josh Harris and he said something amazing and you can encourage all your friends with it? Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing?
Bad.
Bad?
Just because you're distracted. I've done it before and I missed the next 5 or 6 minutes of what he said.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I think it's good.
Good?
I've been tweeting the whole thing so all the family that come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good, bad, neutral? Anyone neutral? One neutral?
Neutral, yeah. I mean, I think it can be bad, like you said, because it's distracting. If it's taking you out of the moment. But then it can be good. I'll
followed a lot of people or learned about other people, you know, by seeing a friend of mine saying, hey, I just heard this guy. And, oh, well, I'll check him out. And I liked him. And so it's opened up.
I just wrote a blog on that, and we said, we came out on the bad, but I would argue it's neutral. It's good, it's bad. But if I'm speaking, I don't want you to tweet. And the reasons we came up with, we just brainstormed some reasons. We said, number one, everyone around you doesn't know what world you're in. Like, they don't know if you're with them or not. And number two, most of us can't handle the temptations that are all there, like the email and like status updates and so forth. And number three, even if I'm looking at you, I don't know if you're really with me or not. Like, I like raw communication, like the immediacy of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I could have just, like, videoed this and given it to you, but we would have missed out on all the questions. And we could have said, well, we could have worked out something where I did the video and then you, like, texted the questions in. It's like, or we could just be here. Like, we could just be with each other. Like, all, like, you know? Like, right here. Isn't that crazy? It's like old school communication. And so that's what I push for, but I'm fine with people that want to Twitter, Facebook, and or update statuses. Where are you at with that, Ben? And you didn't tell me where you were at. Ben's like a social media. These guys are in the back. They work with me. They're both like social media guru guys.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you said, we're all sinful. So, like, technology in itself isn't really neutral because it's like the hammer. The hammer is just the hammer. It's what the user does with it. So, even if you have good intentions to glorify God during the sermon, that could be good. Or you could have the intentions of, showing your friends of looking where you're at. So it's like, it's really left up to the person. Yeah. So there's freedom in the gospel to do that. I like how you say, write it down, tweet it later. Because there is some kind of testimony in sharing with your friends something that penetrated your heart that could reach out to somebody else as well, too.
Yeah, that's what we said, just people just do it afterwards. I'm fine with people. I'm flattered when people do it during. I'm like, oh, look it, there I am. Tweet for me. All glory be to God, right? I think it's great, but I think, when I spoke here at Southern, it was like, Twitter, everyone, Twittering all kinds of stuff. But a part of me, like, I love that immediacy of that preaching experience. There's something that happens in that, and it also just totally depends on the person. I've from the comments, a lot of people that are very in the social media world, they've said it really hinders them. So some people that maybe aren't as, like, absorbed, like, it's a part of the world, it doesn't hinder them as much. And they're like, I'm able to be there. But then a lot of people have told me offline, like, yeah, when I see that person pick up their phone, I'm like, they're not paying attention.
Yeah, we had a kid, even just today, who was on his phone, and I was like, what are you doing? And he showed it to me, and it was, like, a verse or something. And I'm like, okay, it's one of those moments where I'm like, listen, you don't need to do that right now. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm glad you're doing that. And it's just kind of, I just thought he was distracted.
Yeah.
And as, his leader, I'm going, stop it. You're supposed to be listening, put your phone away. And he's like, it's a verse.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, that's just the world. Like, they're like, I'm on, like, many people, they're like, what are you talking about? Like, what a Bible in my hand? Like, but I have a lot of friends that are like, dude, I'm not going to use my Bible on my phone anymore. It's just too distracting. So, like, they go through seasons where they're like, dude, it's so awesome. I can share, I can encourage people, and then all of a sudden they go, I just can't do it anymore. And it's because it's just a whole world that's there. And that's where we need it. There's two responses with everything. There's the bear hug, and then there's the, what's the other one? Cold shoulder. And so the classic understanding of that is legalism, which is cold shoulder, which is saying, don't do that. We're going to come up with all our laws. And then there's license, which is like, you can do whatever you want. And then there's gospel freedom. Okay, so some of you need to say, like, dude, there's a lot of things I'm not going to watch. Like, right now, at this stage of my life, I can't take most R-rated movies. I can't even take what the violence does to me. I can't even, I don't know where you're at. But you can't legislate that for everybody. Your conscience needs to say, you know what, I'm not going there. For some of you, you need to take a huge break from, like, social media in general because you're so, like, bear-hugging it. But you don't want to go to the other side of making a bunch of laws. And so there's a balance with where people are at. And that's where, as you grow in maturity and kind of as you learn lessons, you don't want to create law with all your lessons that you're learning. And that's what a lot of people do. And this is a strange, I'll tell you what, this is a strange world, this shift. It's a big shift. It's bigger than like TV or radio or, the movie theater. Like, it's a major shift in the way we process and communicate information. You guys were right in the midst of it. Fascinating. I mean, it is, to me, it's fascinating at least. And it's an opportunity where we need students that are maturing through it, thinking about it, reflecting on it. Huge opportunity. Five take homes. Be real. Be who you are. Don't pose like something you're not online. And realize what you do to people online, you're really doing to them. So do unto others online as you'd want them to do unto you. Don't be a jerk. Just be real. Think about the future. It's coming. That's a real important one. You know, your future mate's coming, your future job's coming, your school's coming. I mean, I immediately go online when someone applies for a job, and I really judge them. I'm just telling you, I really do. I judge them for their political statements. I judge them for what they read. I judge them for how they update. I'm like, I'm searching that thing for what they've posted online, what they've hidden, and what they haven't hidden. I mean, you can go back and you can clean up a lot of stuff. You know what I'm talking about? Ben, can you tell them how to clean up their stuff online?
Yeah, it all depends on which one you're at. But you,
Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook. It's a long process. They made it really hard. If you go to, like, your name in the top right-hand corner, in privacy, you can set a lot of those settings. You can go to your account, delete things, and make it so only certain people see stuff. Pictures can always be untagged. Anything you're tagged in can always be untagged, or you can block that person. So there's definitely ways to protect yourself.
Yeah, and I would say do that. You know, they actually say business owners aren't so much looking at, like, what's online as how well you're hiding things online. You might go, well, that's not real. I'm like, you don't want to be real with some of the stuff you guys have posted online, or I have. Chris?
Yeah, I mean, that's like kind of what I do. I get made fun of by my friends because there's like four pictures I have on Facebook that I'm actually tagging. I'm like ruthless about, like, I have tagged like 99% of stuff, posts or pictures. Like, if it's, I don't know, I just get rid of as much as possible. And just because of my place in the church, being on staff at church especially, it just heightens that. I just am like super crazy about it. I'm just super paranoid. And I don't think I'm going to regret, like, being cautious.
No, absolutely not.
I'm not going to, like, be embarrassed. He's like, oh, man, I was really cautious online. I should have been just let it out there. I don't think I'm going to be saying that.
We really step into people's world in our church. There's rules for what you can and can't post online if you're on staff. And if you're a leader, like, you're held to a much higher account. And so it just seems kind of basic, you know.